Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on our most recent encounter. We're your hosts, Director Shepard.
And Director Stolte.
And along here, we have a guest this week, Airman Seki. Lou, good day to you.
Yes, sir.
And you've all been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent missions from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've all been cleared to know the truth. So this week, we are investigating. Josh, what do we got?
Well, we're going to take a look at Season 1, Episode 1, which is just Pilot. That's the title.
All right.
So I don't know if that's the theme for, you know, like the May. I don't know if May, you know, if that's it's about – it didn't seem to be about her. So
yeah, it's not all about May.
My guess – no, it's not. So I'm guessing it's because it's the very first episode. So I have a feeling they're going to pick up the series, though, based on you know, what I've seen. What do you think?
Oh yeah, I think it's a pretty likely conclusion there. That's very astute.
Yeah. Well, this episode originally aired on September 24th, 2013. It was written by Joss and Jed Whedon, and also Marissa. Ooh, I'm going to mess this name up.
Tancheron.
But see, I wasn't
basically
even.
It's Jed's wife. They can just say Jed's wife.
Exactly. So, yeah. And it was actually directed by Joss Whedon, this episode. Now, not all the episodes will be directed by Joss, right?
Now, he's famous for something else, but I can't, for the life of me, put my finger on it. What was that?
He's famous for having almost the same first name as me.
Oh, yes. I'm sure he gets called Josh a lot.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you know what? This will probably be his first successful TV series because it's actually on one of the top three networks and not Fox. So it will not be canceled after the first season.
No, I have a feeling you're right. All right, so in this first episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., our good friend Agent Coulson is back. We'll talk about that. But he gathers is a new team to work with him. This team has Agent Ward, Agent May. Of course, you have Fitz and Simmons, and they are gathered together to stop a hacker group known as Rising Tide. This group's led by Sky, who is the voice of Rising Tide, and so far the only member we've seen. But she catches a new superhero. This superhero's name is Mike Peterson. And he's working on his superhero name. But he actually saves a woman from an explosion, she catches it on the film, or on camera film, what am I saying? And she kind of approaches Mike, wanting to help him bring down S.H.I.E.L.D., kind of expose him a little bit, maybe create a superhero out in the open, right? So Agent Coulson and his team, though, they have some other ideas. They want to bring her into the team and help contain Mike, because his powers are slowly degrading. It's not looking too good for old Mike. So,
does not look good for Mike.
Does not.
The hooded hero, which she really hopes he's going to change that title. So,
That's been taken, I think.
Oh, yeah, probably. I'm sure you could look for it on Wiki, maybe in The Tick or something like that that showed up. But before we get into breaking down this episode, there's some new. This is our news segment right now, but not a lot of news other than just kind of names of episodes that are upcoming and things like that. There is a new trailer that does tease some more of Season 1. It looks like it covers maybe a couple extra episodes here. There's some cool tech that they've got. Looks like they've got, you know, more witty banter to be expected, and you can find it on Comic Book Resources. It's got some footage of what appears to be the next episode, based on what I saw in the little trailer clip for that. also, as people may know, S.H.I.E.L.D. And the related characters come from the Marvel comic books. where they debuted in August of 1965 in a story called in a story of Strange Tales number 135 in Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was originally written by Stan Lee and drawn by Jack Kirby, who is they're both very famous people in comic books. Stan Lee, an executive producer on this show, he's still kicking around. No cameo by him, though, that I saw. And as we find out in this episode, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which this is a part of, so this show relates, you know, with Iron Man and Thor and Captain America and the Avengers movies and everything like that, the Hulk. S.H.I.E.L.D. in this universe stands for Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division. Now, just in case people out there are keeping score, in the comics, the acronym originally stood for Supreme Headquarters International Espionage Law Enforcement Division. Later, it was changed in around 1991 to the Strategic Hazard Intervention Espionage Logistics Directorate. So there have been several versions of S.H.I.E.L.D. there. And if anyone out there is interested in finding out a little bit more about S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics, there is a great new trade paperback. It's about $30, I think. Just came out last week, and it's called S.H.I.E.L.D. by Jim Steranko, The Complete Collection. And he is probably considered the main artist that kind of put S.H.I.E.L.D. on the map from Strange Tales and also from its own title called S.H.I.E.L.D. He really did some kind of pop art at the height of the psychedelic 60s. He really put a lot of that psychedelicness from the 60s into the comic, and that's some of the finest examples of his work right there. So that's some background for everybody, but let's get directly into the discussion topics here, because we've got a lot of stuff to cover on this this brand new show. First off, guys, I'd like to talk about the characters on the show, and to start with Agent Coulson, who died in The Avengers last year when that came out in theaters. So, Lou, what were your thoughts, first off, I guess, on his death in The Avengers? Did you think that was a permanent thing? And then what do you think about his return here in the episode?
Well, you know, I'd have to say I thought it was permanent in the movie. Yeah, it made perfect sense to me. I thought, you know, hey, this is a good way to kind of rally everybody together, and they're going to come to his, you know, defense, I guess, even though he died. But it made perfect sense to me, and I didn't think twice about it until we started getting the, you know, hints of a series coming up and then talking about him being the main guy in the show. And I'm like, well, okay, how's that going to work? Well, I don't have the background that you do in comics, of course, but, you know, they can do anything in movies. They can bring anybody back if they want to. So I figured, well, there's some way they're going to do it. But, you know, they did talk about it in the episode that, you know, he died for 8 seconds and they brought him back. So I guess that's what happened. I mean,
or is it bump?
That's right.
Yes, because as soon as Coulson leaves, you had the doctor played by Wheaton alumnus Ron Glass. He was Shepherd Book in Serenity. Also, he was on Barney Miller, for those of you that remember that show back from the 70s.
Was that a Joss Whedon show, too?
That was not a Joss Whedon show, though. Though, oh. You know what? He comes from a family of writers. I wouldn't be surprised if his dad wrote an episode of Barney Miller, though.
Oh,
I didn't look that up, but that is totally possible. But, you know, he says to Agent Hill, who Colby Smulders, who makes an appearance here in between her shooting for the final season of How I Met Your Mother. He says, so he doesn't know. And she says, no, he can never know. It's like, what can he never know? But I don't know what he was doing. But as Coulson was leaving that scene, he sort of rubbed his cheek right below his left eye, which was weird because usually you don't see actors, you know, like scratching themselves or, you know, rubbing on parts of their body and stuff on camera, unless there's a reason for it. And, you know, it was almost kind of like he was like readjusting something or, you know, I don't know. It's weird. But my idea, and this has been bandied about a lot online, is that he is an LMD, which is a life model decoy. And this is something that was introduced back in that Strange Tales number 135, in the very first issue of Nick Fury and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. it's basically a lifelike robot that you can't tell is a decoy, a duplicate of the person that it's duplicating. And the reason that this is a potential valid theory in Iron Man 3, no, in Avengers, when he goes to collect Tony, you know, he Coulson tries to get in touch with Tony Stark. Tony says, "I'm sorry, you know, Mr. Stark's not here right now. This is his LMD. You know, please leave a message." And Coulson just barges in anyway. But there was that little, you know, brief mention of an LMD. So they've now introduced it into the, you know, lexicon. So they're, you know, the people that are doing this show and these movies, you know, they're drawn from every element of Marvel canon that they can. So, and again, like you said, you know, it's a movie, you know, you can bring anybody back for any reason. I did feel that the Avengers was, you know, there was something fishy about that entire scene, at least the way that Nick played it off to the Avengers, because Agent Hill said something after the fact, like, those Captain America cards, you know, weren't on him. They were in his locker. So I felt that Nick Fury was, you know, lying to them in some fashion, and there was something else going on. So I'm interested to see where they go with this, and this could lead to a lot of other interesting possibilities that I'm sure we'll talk about on future episodes. But Josh, what about you? Did you believe the fact that he had died and came back, or what's your allegiance with that?
Well, because I am easily fooled by movie magic, I really did think he was dead from the Avengers. But I, you know, I didn't bat an eye, and it didn't bother me when they said he was going to be back. Because, I mean, like you said, I mean, I didn't feel that scene was fishy, but it kind of just ended, you know. I mean, it's not like they had a funeral where they buried him and all that. I mean, so right. He just wasn't seen again. So it didn't seem out of the realm of possibility for him to be back in some way. You know, maybe he just didn't die. Maybe they saved him.
Yeah.
I would have been completely fine with that. But it doesn't feel like that's where they're going based on, you know, what he said. He can, you know, she said he could never know. So, but now, you know, that could be a really good storyline, but, it could also end up a little too hokey. So I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't.
I think they could probably do it in a way that won't be hokey. Now, one other thing that got me thinking about this is, what if there never really was an Agent Coulson, or maybe there was, and it was just a long time ago. I don't know if either of you have seen the what they call Marvel one-shots. It's like a little 10 or 15-minute extra movie that they put on some of the Blu-ray DVDs. And there was one, I think it was on Captain America, the First Avenger. There was the Marvel one-shot was called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Thor's Hammer.
That's the only one I've seen.
Okay. Have you seen that, Lou?
No, I haven't seen that.
So the premise is Agent Coulson at the, I think it's in the end sequence to the Hulk, they get a call that this mysterious object, or I guess Coulson is in New Mexico, and he says he's just found this object in the desert, and, you know, it pans down and you see it's Thor's hammer.
Right.
So this short takes place on, it just opens with a car driving out into the desert, pulls over at a gas mart, which happens to be Roxxon Oil, which is, Roxxon is the gas station of the Marvel Universe, or the oil company of the Marvel Universe. It was also seen in Iron Man in the background there. So he starts pumping his gas. It's just a bunch of quick shots. There's no dialogue. He goes into the Quickie Mart, and he starts looking at donuts, and he can't decide between the white powdered frosting donut and the chocolate donuts. As he's bending over,
can I just say, now, as a kid, I would just buy both, and then I would break them in half and eat them at the same time. I'm just saying that could have been an option. I'm just saying that.
And I'm sure he would have done that too if he could have finished buying the donuts at that time, because he stands up and there are two guys robbing the gas mart, the lady at the front. So, of course, these guys didn't even look around to see that there was anybody in the store. So Coulson stands up and says, excuse me. And they turn around, put their gun on him. He's like, I've got this gun here. Would you guys like it? And they're like, yeah, toss it up here. And so he's like, I'd rather just slide it, you know, and so he slides it to them. And as the guy bends down to pick it up, Coulson runs up the aisle, picks up a bag of flour or sugar, throws it at one of the guy's head. All of a sudden it goes into slow motion. He steps on the shelf, jumps up in the air, kicks the guy, knocks the gun down. Boom, gun goes off. I mean, there's this big fight. Coulson takes these guys out in like 3 seconds with nothing but, you know, with no weapon, just his body and some elements from the Quickie Mart. And then he pays for his food, and the lady's still standing with her hands up in the air, and it's all very humorous and stuff. But I'm thinking, wow, he could have been a LMD. You know, if he does turn out to be an LMD, he could have been an LMD back then, because, I mean, that's some pretty hefty training. Now, it's not, I guess, anything that we haven't seen, like, say, Hawkeye or the Black Widow do. But I mean, you know, I mean, Coulson, I mean, he looks like he's kind of a schlub every now and again, but then, you know, he's totally badass in this. So who knows? But to me, I think he's the standout character in this show, and he's what is going to hook the audience to watch. I mean, he's got all the best lines.
Well, you know, if I could add one thing or two, I have a feeling that we're going to have this storyline of what happened to him and what can he never know, and, you know, you know, what happened during those 8 seconds or longer,
right,
through the rest of the season and the rest of the series.
Yeah.
I think it's one of these things that we're never going to find the answer out to, or maybe at the very end we will.
Well, there's may I get into rumor speculation here? There's also talk that he may end up turning into the Vision, who is an android character in Marvel Comics, The Avengers. So there's other possibilities that they can, you know, turn him into a superhero if this is the case. But right now he's just leading this team of kind of misfit agents that Josh let us know about. And we've got everyone has a particular, I guess, dysfunction, and the doctor has cleared them to be on the team, but he's, you know, at first off, he says he's not crazy about Coulson being on the team. He wants him to rest up more because he had been in Tahiti, I guess. Coulson has this whole story about Tahiti, which really makes me want to go to Tahiti. I think that would be nice. but we've got let's start off with the first character that we see, who is Agent Ward, who is in Paris, and he is stopping some Chitauri tech from being sold, I guess, on the black market. We're not really sure what this piece does, but he's trying to reclaim it, and he has to hurry because the rising tide has publicized the location of this particular piece of tech, and, quote, everybody is coming for it now, so he's got to get in, and we get to see some of his skills. So, Josh, what can you tell us about Agent Ward here?
Well, you know, he's one of those not a rogue. What am I trying to think of? You know, just kind of an independent guy, likes to work by himself, thinks he's so good that, and he is, you know, that he can kind of do it all on his own. Kind of a ladies' man, thinks of himself as a ladies' man, you know, good looking guy. And, so he doesn't fit the idea of who you would pick for a team. So, you know, Coulson must see something in him that, can work really well with this team, very successful in his mission. You know, he got caught because he was one of many people going to get this thing. So they got there too and found him. I'm not sure who the woman in the bra was. They didn't really explain what she was doing there at all, and she just kind of walked out in disgust.
I would think that she was probably the mistress or whoever of the guy. So there was a guy in a red tie that he stole the fingerprints from.
Right.
So I
right.
figure that's probably.
But she didn't. She didn't seem surprised.
Right.
You know.
Right.
She was kind of like, "Oh, it's you're getting that. Okay, fine. I'm leaving. Whatever." But
yeah.
But anyway, I kind of like him. He feels like he might be, you know, he's not the leader. That's Coulson. But he feels like he kind of might be the main. The center of this group of misfits, you know, that kind of, because he's a very skilled and active member of the team. Now, when we get talking to, you know, about another member who's also very skilled, but she's not quite as active. She doesn't seem to be very interested in that kind of action.
Right, right. So, Lou, what did you see with Ward? Is he a character that is likable, that that we will enjoy watching on a weekly basis here?
Yeah, I think so. You know, one thing I have about new television series as I start to watch them and as they evolve, I always give them at least a whole season. And usually I'm not really hooked until the end of the season. I think this first episode did really hook me. But, yeah, I think the characters have to grow into themselves, too. So, you don't really know the actors. You don't really know what their characters are going to be. You're getting to learn them, and they're learning themselves. So I think we're going to like him. I think we're going to like the interplay between all the characters, if that makes sense. I mean, I think I'm really going to enjoy him as an actor. Mm-hmm. And he plays off the other guys pretty well, too.
You know, one thing they did with him, which was kind of good in this first episode, because, you know, he came across as kind of an arrogant kind of guy, you know, that thinks he's so hot and everything and doesn't need anybody. He can do it all on his own. But they put him in that scene where he injected the little truth serum into him and kind of exposed some of his inner not weaknesses, but, you know, things that make him vulnerable, you know, so that kind of set him up as say, you know, he is a good guy, even though he's arrogant and, sure, and tough and mean. But, that kind of established him as being one of the good guys, somebody that could be likable, even if he doesn't look like it on the outside.
Gramsci? Yeah. So, and that actor is Brett Dalton, and I'm not familiar with his work here, but according to IMDb, he's been in just a couple movies, and he's a guest star on two different TV episodes of stuff here. So I don't really really recognize anything that he's done. It doesn't look like. Except for Clark Gregg, who plays Coulson, and Ming-Na Wen, who plays Agent May, everybody else is still, you know, is pretty new to shows and stuff. They're all it's a young cast, I guess, too. So they really haven't done a lot. the next character that Josh was alluding to is Agent May, who's played on Ming-Na Wen. Most famous for her role on ER. And also Mulan, the voice of Mulan from Disney. Now, the thing that when I heard she was going to be on the show, I was like, okay, that's cool. I know who this actress is and everything like that. She is 50 years old, if you guys can believe
what?
That.
Yeah, that's amazing. I heard that and I'm like, what?
She looks great for her age. And so you're out there kicking ass. I mean, it's incredible. She is... When Coulson finds her, she is a desk-bound paper pusher in the place where they make the red tape. As Coulson says, and she doesn't want to have anything to do with him or the team. She's more than happy to be stuck, you know, working in this cubicle. So, Lou, what is it about her? What do you think is in her past that we're going to find out that has made her, you know, this obviously skilled martial, you know, she knows martial arts. She can fly planes. Why is she sitting behind a desk?
Yeah, you know, that was something I was watching the episode and I'm thinking to myself, okay, was there something in the comics that I didn't know about this character beforehand? I don't know if she was in the comics. I don't know if it's a history of her elsewhere.
Yeah, none of these characters, and even really Coulson, though he's been introduced in the comics, none of these characters are based off anybody from the comic books.
Okay, that actually makes me feel a little better then. Good. Okay. You know, I imagine we're going to see that. I imagine we're going to see that there was some sort of an issue she had, maybe working with Coulson in the past, where she was hurt, or in a position where she, you know, lost her team or something, you know, something traumatic happened. And we're going to find out what that is, probably bits and pieces, like little breadcrumbs along the way, I think.
Yeah, to me, it almost felt like she had caused something with her skills or with her, you know, her leadership or something like that, that she had caused some sort of disaster or mistake, that she was giving this, you know, she was trying to atone for, just by working at this desk in this dark room.
Yeah. I heard a really interesting theory of all places on the internet that someone put forth. They didn't offer any proof for this. It was just, you know, sort of one of their ideas about it. But they were thinking that she might have been the fighter pilot that launched the nuke into New York in the Avengers, and that, you know, the whole battle in New York, because, you know, the whole premise with the show here is the fact that there was the time before the Battle of New York and people were just going about their lives, and then all of a sudden gods and monsters and aliens now exist, and now we're in the new world, is what they reference it on the show. So, you know, that was, you know, her devastating moment that she had to actually pull the trigger and do something like that. So,
well, that's see, something like that would fit with kind of the picture I had of her.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, there's so many different things to speculate on, but yeah, I think it's the same kind of thing, you know, like Lou, you were saying, just that, you know, there may be a, you know, through some action or inaction of her own, even with all that skill, she lost her team, or, you know, allowed somebody else to die, and that's kind of, you know, emotionally scarred her.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see what's going on there. Then we get the kind of the inseparable pair of Fitz and Simmons, referred to just colloquially as Fitzsimmons. Fitz is the guy, played by Ian Castecker, and Simmons is the girl, played by Elizabeth Henstridge, who I was going to check. I think that's Natasha Henstridge's daughter, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
I was going to take a look here and see if I can find like a mini biography here. I'm not sure about that because it doesn't say. So maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just a common English name. Anyway, she's English, he's Scottish, and she's into biotech, and he's into other tech. They're kind of the geek surrogates for all of us geeky people here. And I had heard some initial reviews about them, and so I was thinking, you know, oh, I'm not sure how well this is going to work. I love these guys. I think they have a great banter off the two characters. They, you know, are the, they provide all the science and all the, I forget what, you know, there's some kind of word that they use in television when they have to explain all that gobbledygook. You know, they just come up with some explanation as to, you know, why do the radios work this way? And it's like, blah, 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 blah.
It is technobabble.
Technobabble, that's it, yeah. So, but, you know, they've got some great banter. They've got some funny lines. Simmons is just, he's kind of awkward, and he's working with these women, and he doesn't really quite know how to be around them, I think, which is kind of funny. And so, you know, that's pretty cool. What'd you guys think about that?
I like the two of them together. They make it. I like that they're kind of paired together, and that makes them almost like one character, you know. And you can use that for a lot of different things. You know, one of them could be in peril, and the other one desperate to help. And you know, you also have an opportunity there to have some chemistry, but no pun intended, between the two of them. So I like the idea, and they're different than the others. They have these skills, and this is one of the things I like about the whole group is that they all have very different personalities from each other and different skills from each other. And so, you know, that's, I think, what Coulson sees in them as being a good team. So I like the addition to them.
Well, it's very Mission Impossible in that way, kind of like the movies, I guess, but I'm thinking more of like the old school Mission Impossible with Peter Graves and Leonard Nimoy and stuff, where you had, you know, as an espionage show, you had this team come together, and there's one person that knows weapons really well, and one person that knows makeup really well, and one person knows electronics really well. And, you know, amazingly, every operation calls exactly for someone who knows makeup and electronics and weapons, you know, mm-hmm. but they do it in such a way that it's believable enough. So, that's what I like about this, is that they, And the writing for these characters, you know, I mean, I don't expect any less from Joss Whedon, being a big fan of his. So this is, for me, this is kind of the culmination of many geek in, you know, entertainment industry things that all come together. So I've got comic books here. You've got the tie-ins to the movies. Plus, you've got all of Joss Whedon stuff with Buffy and Angel and Serenity and Dollhouse. You know, all coming together, and the writing and the characterizations and stuff like that. You got these wonderful little character moments that, with just a few lines, they're able to get across exactly who this character is, and give you a good sense of, you know, how they react, what their view of the world is. You know, are they kind of a brooding and heavy kind of character, which is kind of what Agent May is. She did not lighten up at all throughout this episode. Ward got a chance to be a little exposed, as you said, when he got the truth serum injected in him. And then Fitz and Simmons are kind of the comedy aspect of the show, I think, because they provide a little lightness, though they do more than that as well. Then the final addition to the team is Sky, who is a hacker that is, as Josh, as you pointed out, the potentially the only member of Rising Tide. I don't know if that's a bigger organization or if she just makes it out to be a bigger organization. She wants to appear to be a badass, but she's really not, isn't she?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we've seen enough of her to know whether she's or not. I think she's very skilled and talented, which I think is as far as, you know, hacking and finding out information. So I think that's why she kind of considers herself a badass. But, it doesn't appear that she would have any fighting skills or anything like that. So it's more of her personality, I think, mm-hmm. of being able to talk to people and either getting them to do what she wants or getting information out of them, kind of like she did with Mike Peterson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Lou, you saw her lift Mike's, not his wallet, but I guess just his driver's license off so mm-hmm. she could find out information, which is kind of weird because as good a hacker as she is, you'd think she'd be able to find stuff online. I didn't know what you thought about that. Is that...
Yeah, that was the one thing that kind of took me out of the story was her. I liked her character. I liked the way she joked around and, you know, like when she was in the interrogation room, she's like, oh, is there a, you know, easy way? No. And she just kind of slunk back down in her chair. I thought it was done really well. But her character, you know, if she's such a great hacker, she can, you know, hack into SHIELD's, you know, databases and in their systems, like, you know, almost on a whim.
Yeah.
And she can't find the guy's name out any other way. It just seemed awful strange to me. And yet, you know, she has all these capabilities and they find your van that quickly. You know, like all of a sudden she's right there.
Yeah.
Well, was the whole purpose of the meeting just to get his name? Was that what it was? Or, I mean, did she want more than that? And it just, he was there and she could take it. And so she did. That's how I saw it as I watched it. It didn't even occur to me that, oh, yeah, she could have got online, but. Was that why she was meeting with him, just to get his name?
I think it was partially that. It was also the fact that, you know, she wanted to almost recruit him, right, to use against SHIELD. She wants to put him out as the face of the new breed, right, the superhero, to get in front of it, as she says, so that when SHIELD comes for him, as she knows that they will, that... you know, there's public opinion, I guess, that can play into it. It's just that right now he's unknown, and if he disappears, who's going to miss him, right? So I think she was trying to use him for her cause, whatever that is, but why is her cause her cause? Why is she trying to expose them other than just that she knows something that, or she thinks she knows something that she feels needs to be exposed, like, you know, kind of like Edward Snowden, right? Found out some information. The public needs to be aware of this. Well, why does the public need to be aware of this? That's what we don't really know yet. And there's also some other weird stuff going on with her as well. I don't know if you guys picked up on this. First thing, when she's meeting with Mike in the cafe or the restaurant, wherever it is they are, she's playing with three sugar packets on the table. And she's kind of moving them around like a shell game. And they actually focus on this. It's not that you just see her doing that business. They actually took the time to do a shot of her move like the middle packet out and slide the right packet over. And I didn't know if either you either caught that or had any idea about that.
I saw her play one, but I didn't think twice about it.
The other thing was when she had Mike in her van, and she is, it was either right before or right after she was erasing his information from whatever, the one computer system that controls all information, I guess, where, you know, she's like, it's not as easy as doing, you know, whatever it was, you know, playing a game. And he's like, have you done this before? And she's like, yes, once, which I'm guessing is probably when she erased her information, because we don't know her real name. We never, Agent Ward had asked her, but we never found out. But there were three small objects on her table in the van, and she reaches over and takes one of them and sticks it into her bra, or like kind of pulls her shirt back and tucks it in there. And I don't know if either of you saw that and had any idea what that might be.
Wow, you're good. Yeah, I'll never play the shell game with you because I don't think I'm going to fool you. You catch all these little things.
They wouldn't show stuff if it's not – I mean, in a normal TV show, you might see people doing stuff. But they – you know, when they actually do a cutaway to show this and it's Joss Whedon, I mean, he doesn't put information out there unless he wants you to pay attention to it in some fashion. So I'm just thinking, what is it and why? The little things, one of them looked like a SIM card, or maybe they were all SIM cards, you know, like from a phone. But what and why, I don't know yet. You know, that's kind of one of those ongoing mysteries.
Well, I, one of the reasons I like her is because of her her skills, I guess, her kind of tricky, secretive kind of things, and her personality, you know. So if like I said earlier, you know, Agent Ward is kind of the center of the group, I think she's kind of the companion to that. And I could see some kind of a relationship storylines going on with those two as well. So.
Yeah. She's also the most playful probably of all the characters as you pointed out with the interrogation sequence, Lou, where, you know, she's like, oh, is there an easy way? And, you know, he's like, no. And she's like, okay, whatever. And there's the part where he's talking about, you know, that she's just some cosplayer outside of Stark Tower. And she's like, what? She's all affronted. And then she's like, well, no, just once. You know, so she has a bunch of great lines as well. I think Coulson's lines... I think there, he comes out just on top in some of the cool lines, probably the best one being where he was introduced, where Agent Ward says, well, I know that Agent Coulson died, and then Coulson steps out of the shadows and says, you know, welcome to Level 7. And he's like, I'm sorry about that. It was a little dark back there in that corner. I think the light bulb's out. We need to get that fixed. I mean, it's
that was awesome.
It's brilliant. You know, this is good stuff. And it's one of those things where it's like, it feels like they just made the stuff up on the set. And I know they did not. I mean, I'm sure this stuff was scripted out, you know, to the nth degree or whatever. So.
Well, I think the whole series, I'm of course speculating as somebody that's not involved in it at all, but it seems like the entire series just originated from this actor's portrayal of Agent Coulson and just his personality, his cool personality that is still capable of just about anything, as we've seen from different things. I mean, really, in all of the Avengers movies, he really didn't do much, and he became so popular just because of this sort of ability to banter back and forth with whoever it was. And
in very few scenes.
Yeah, yeah, and you can see that. I'm very, very glad that they're continuing with that, and that, because that's what made him so appealing, and I think that's where the general idea from the show originated. Obviously, they want to kind of ride the wave of the Marvel success in the movies and put that to TV in a kind of a different way. But I'm not sure who else they would do that with. I can't think of another character that they would be able to do this idea in a TV series with. So
not a character that they've introduced so far, at least.
No. So, I mean, because the rest of them are pretty generic, you know, he stands out because of this guy's portrayal of him. My favorite line was, when he's walking with Ward in the plane, and he says, did you hear the one about the guys who invented flying? And, you know, that kind of brushes it off. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like, that was a joke. You know, I'm not going to tell it now.
Yeah, exactly. I want to hear the joke now. Yeah. It's just he's so deadpan. Clark Gregg just plays it so deadpan. It's great. So, okay, the next character that I want to talk about is Lola. And Lola's 1960s Corvette. Don't know the I don't know, either of you guys know what kind of model car that is?
Oh, I should.
I do not.
Yeah, I know it's a Corvette. I do know that. It's red. It's a red Corvette. It's a little red Corvette.
Oh boy.
Okay. No? No takers? All right.
I agree. I'm actually.
I thought you were going to tell me, you got to slow down.
Kind of.
You move too fast.
I kind of want to dance now. Yeah, you know? I just want to dance slowly.
Boy, what did I get myself into?
So, anyway, so this is obviously a car with history, and it goes back to the Avengers, where Agent Coulson is a collector. He collects rare and vintage things, including Captain America trading cards, first series, and. He's also got this collectible car, and he points out that, you know, people are often mistaken the fact that new does not necessarily always go with improved, which I thought, you know, there were a lot of great lines like that, you know, those kind of thematic, philosophical lines that I've come to expect from Joss Whedon and his writers. They really take the writing to the next level in these kind of shows. But, you know, Lola's just this cherry car. He doesn't want the guy working on the bus, the name of the airplane, to touch it. But we find out a little bit more about Lola at the end of the episode. So, Lou, were you expecting the car to fly away like that?
I have to say, yeah, not because I had any inside knowledge, but because there was, you know, rumors about whether or not it was going to be a flying car, you know, on the internet previously. And I had no knowledge of this before that one comment. So I said, oh, okay, Mike, I'm not sure I'm going to like a flying car per se, but I thought they did it pretty well.
So the comment that I had heard from my coworker was, he was like, I loved the episode up until the end, and then they did that Back to the Future thing, and I did not like that.
Yeah.
So, what are your thoughts? So when, if someone, you know, says that this is just a ripoff of Back to the Future?
I don't know. I mean, it was done in the comics, right? I mean, I'll have to rely on you for this, but was it in the comics?
Yeah, 1965, first episode of, or first issue with S.H.I.E.L.D., flying car. It was Porsche 904 in that one, but.
So maybe it wasn't a takeoff from Back to the Future. Maybe they stole it from Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. I think Back to the Future really took its cue from the flying S.H.I.E.L.D. car, which is, that is the S.H.I.E.L.D. flying car. I believe that is the proper name. If you Google that, you'll find some images for it. But, yeah, I mean, I hadn't paid attention on the internet. I was really trying to stay spoiler free. I mean, I heard that, Colby Smulders, was going to have a cameo in this, but I was really, you know, and then people had seen the pilot at Comic-Con, and I just was trying not to, pay attention to what was being said. And when I saw the car in the original trailer, I was like, they might. That would really be cool if they made it a flying car. If we can't have the helicarrier in the series every week, we can have the flying car. And then he pushes the button and the wheels fold up and the thing takes off like a jet. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is going to be cool.
Yep.
So what about you, Josh? Were you expecting that?
Well, first off, I found that, I think, if this is accurate, I found that Lola is a 1962 C1 series Corvette convertible.
Okay, 62. Nice.
And I would say, as far as the flying, I have no problem with a flying car. Oh, my goodness. I mean, everything else in the universe, why would you have a problem with a flying car? Sure. And if you remember back to, I want to say, what movie was it? I'm kind of getting them all mixed up now. But where was it that you know, Tony Stark's father was showing off his car with flying capabilities?
Yeah,
was that Captain America?
Captain America.
Iron Man?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know, you see that. I mean, that kind of stuff was possible. I think what caused the problem, and I don't know how much this bothered. It didn't bother me, but I thought they maybe could have done it differently. It was the way they presented it. It really did truly look like Back to the Future. I mean, it looked like they did a close-up shot of the wheels folding down, and I think they could have probably done it a little less similar to that scene, and maybe people wouldn't have had quite the problem with it. But like I said, my gosh, geez. You can't let that kind of stuff bother you.
Yeah, but how cool was it? I mean, like the little shield logo flips up on the back on the trunk and everything at the end there.
Man. I mean, if I was gonna have a flying car, I would want a Corvette convertible. So good choice.
Yeah, very nice. So, but you know, again, when they drew the flying car in the very first Shield comic, you know, it's again the wheels folded out. You know, they didn't tuck up or anything like that. They fold in the same way. They came out further from the car, so they basically imagine if the wheels folded out so that the bottom of the wheel stayed where it was, but the top, you know, folded out away from the car, and it was kind of more like wings. but you know, that's its origins are pure to what Shield is in the comics and here as well. You know, the helicarrier, the flying car, the gadgets, that's all the kind of stuff that that was originally in the comics. So
and it fits with the idea of the series too. I mean, it's a, you know, a fairly secretive government agency that is in charge of checking out strange things that you're going to need to be inventive about.
Yeah.
In order to solve and investigate.
right. And that's where a lot of these gadgets that we're going to see in the series come from. Just as a quick aside, when S.H.I.E.L.D. was created, when the comic book was created, Stan Lee was trying to latch on to the espionage genre that was big in the 60s. So James Bond was big, created at least in film in the early 60s. I think by 65 he had had I think his third film was out by that point. You also had a TV series called The Man from UNCLE, UNCLE, which was an acronym. It stood for something, starring Peter Vaughn. So that was really where the riff for S.H.I.E.L.D. came from. It was like, okay, so we need to have something like that. So we want to have an acronym for and, you know, they really just wanted to make the word spell S.H.I.E.L.D., and so they figured out what S.H.I.E.L.D. would stand for. And then, of course, every other organization that S.H.I.E.L.D. fights has a acronym. I guess, James Bond had the same kind of thing because they had SPECTRE, right, which stood for something, S-P-E-C-T-R-E. So that's where it came from, and I think, you know, the DNA of the show comes from the comics, but the comics, of course, were inspired by James Bond and The Man from UNCLE and the other Avengers, the British show with Emma Steed and Mr. Peel, John Steed and Emma Peel, which, boy, before the Avengers movie came out, try Googling the Avengers and all you get was this black and white British show with this guy in a bowler hat and a woman in like a cat suit. And it was
a good show. Right. Good show.
It is a good show. I mean, it was fun. It was very campy as well.
Yeah. My mom loved that show. I grew up on that show.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you know, for a while that was when people talked about the Avengers, that's what you thought you were getting. So, but let's talk a little bit about some of the gadgets that they have in the show. We get introduced to one at the beginning of the show, which I think it's Fitz wants to call it the Night Night Gun. Simmons doesn't like that title, and because it's a prototype that just doesn't work. What were some of the other cool little pieces of tech that you guys saw in it, Josh?
Well, he had his little floating drone scanner things.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how impressed I was with that idea, but I liked how they took that back and they were able to put all that information in kind of the little hologram to investigate where the explosion had come from and what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that idea. Kind of a, I don't know, reminded me of some Star Trek episodes, you know, where they would get in the holodeck to look at something they're investigating. But
and I don't know if you noticed, how many drones did he have? Did you notice?
No, but I bet you did.
I would enlighten you. He had seven.
Uh-huh.
And did you... They were named after the dwarves.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man. Awesome.
I've got to go back and watch this the third time.
I was going to say, were you guys paying attention or what?
It's like, wow, I watched it twice, but...
you get a quick glimpse of his screen, and you could, I think you could make out a couple of the other names, but the one that found the camera or whatever it was called Grumpy.
Oh, okay.
So,
let me just say, this is why you got to listen to the show. This is why you got to listen to our show. This is why you got to listen to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, see, because we have all these little things you can go back and check out. So don't delete Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. off your DVR before you've listened to this podcast.
Good point. Good point. So what about you, Lou? Is there any was there any tech in the show that that really impressed you, that you thought was cool?
You know, I'm trying to think. I mean, the little bug things he had flying around were pretty cool. Did I miss this in the episode, or did they all have now subcutaneous, you know, communicator things installed in their ears?
They said something about that the transceivers in their ear weren't necessary, and then she swabbed his mouth and something about everything was going to work with the DNA now, blah, 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 technobabble, and they can all talk instantaneously wherever they are. So
that's kind of cool, but I'm like, you didn't really see anything or get any more detail about it. So I guess that's there, but
it'll be in one of those things when DK Books publishes, you know, the complete S.H.I.E.L.D. Picture book or whatever, you know, it'll point to the ear and say, you know, subcutaneous transponder. And
on a side note, that is the iPhone 10. Then that'll be out in just a few years. So
cool.
So there was also the cool, there was the truth serum gun that they had. But the thing that I thought was really cool that I would love to get my hands on is the tray that Agent Ward used at the beginning in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's carrying it around. He's got the little rag on it that he can use that's got some kind of microcircuitry in it. So he can get the handprint, not even just fingerprints, gets the whole handprint off the champagne glass the guy was using, which means the guy really doesn't know how to drink properly out of a champagne flute because he's ham-fisting the whole thing.
and that the waiters have very clean or gloved hands.
Exactly. And then when he takes the microfiber off, the tray becomes an X-ray device to allow him to see through the walls and stuff like that. Then he uses it as a frisbee to shoot, you know, to throw into some guy's face and knock him down. So
it's a Tron disc.
That was a proto Tron disc. That's identity disc. That's cool. So, and then that also reminds me of the one cringeworthy moment was when Ward punched the guy in the face with the blender glass. He picked up the jar from the blender and punched him in the face with, and the whole thing shattered. And I don't know if you guys have ever, like, dropped one of those blender containers, but those things don't break too easy. That would hurt.
Maybe it was a French blender. I don't know. Maybe they're thinner.
It's a French blender.
It apparently didn't.
What? It just rolls over and lets the Germans walk in. Is that what?
Oh,
what? Oh, come on, Josh. That's horrible. Why would you say that?
I apologize to all our listening audience.
There's some other references that I saw in the episode here, and based on your guys' track record here, I'm just going to go ahead and read these because I don't know that you guys picked up on any of these. But
I have to say that next week I'm going to study more, just to be more ready.
You know what I do? You listen to the Green Justice podcast? I know Lou does, and Josh, you're on that. So I mean, you know,
I do sometimes listen to that when I'm
pay attention. Now I know that Lou, I don't know about you necessarily, but Josh, I know that the Marvel comics and S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff are not your forte, and they're not anywhere in my top 10 or anything like that. But it's just something that I've been reading about for quite a while. So I don't know.
I'm excited to kind of jump into this universe because it is fairly new to me, so I'm kind of excited to do it. So a lot of these references will be new to me, and I'll check them out because I love doing that.
Well, there's one part where Simmons talks about a journey into mystery, as you know, kind of like this is going to be a great adventure. It's kind of a journey into mystery, which is an interesting reference. That is the original comic that Thor was introduced in, Journey into Mystery. I believe it was number 83 back in the 60s. So nice little nod to the Marvel Universe there. Then when Sky is undergoing her interrogation in the S.H.I.E.L.D. bus. She mentions the New Mexico cover-up, which would be the plot from Thor with the finding of the hammer and probably the whole destruction of the destroyer that came down and leveled that town in New Mexico. She also mentions Project Pegasus, which is a reference to an actual project from Marvel Comics. Was made most famous probably in Marvel 2-in-1. It was like a two-parter with the Thing, and it's a group that is looking into Pegasus stands for something, right? I think it's actually all capitalized. You know, it's an acronym. But it's looking into alternate energy sources in some fashion. And Project Pegasus is actually what was going on at the beginning of the Avengers when they were taking that cube and trying to figure out how to open the gate. And then Loki came through and everything like that. That was, I think, considered Project Pegasus in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And also in Iron Man 2, Tony got a crate that he opened up that said Project Pegasus on it when he was trying to build the new element that he was, you know, creating that weird cyclotron or whatever in his office. Then we got an Iron Man 3 reference with Mike and the other guy from whoever these doctors are, and this group, this centipede group, they are injecting these people with Extremis, which is what the soldiers in Iron Man 3 were having injected into them. Obviously, this is a different mixture because...
Yeah, didn't they say there was some other things mixed up with it too, right?
Yeah, they've... So in Iron Man 3, it was just a single little device that you had to keep injecting and stuff, and this is something that attaches to their skin. It's got gamma radiation. It's also got some of the super soldier serum in it. So we've got elements of Captain America. We've got elements of the Hulk. We've got tech from the Chitauri, which are the alien race that were fought in the Avengers. So all sorts of stuff mixed together in that one. And that's why the guys were exploding, because that was the same exploding people that we saw in Iron Man 3. Then there was that, I'm sure you guys picked up on this one, there was that Spider-Man quote, or kind of Spider-Man quote.
That one I knew.
Yeah, I saw Josh, you had texted me this one. So it was where Sky was saying, you know, with great power comes, and then the rest of the quote is great responsibility, at least in the Spider-Man universe. But in this one, it just, I think she says like a crap ton of danger or something like that. So.
Yeah, when I first heard her start that, I cringed. I'm like, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I'm happy they didn't.
Yeah. Well, I understand there's also a bunch of, they have like their writer's Bible of words that they can't use. Like one of them is mutant, you know, because I guess Sony, or so is it Sony that owns all the, well, Marvel Productions and stuff like this don't own the Fantastic Four, they don't own the X-Men franchise, and they don't own Spider-Man, because those got all sold off. So Sony has Spider-Man, Paramount has Fantastic Four, and I think 20th Century Fox has the X-Men. So they can't really make reference in the Marvel Cinematic Universe to any of those franchises or characters within them. So there are certain people that are off limits, I guess. So maybe that's why. I mean, I think it's funny the way they did the twist on the line, but I think that, you know, they were trying to get around that they probably couldn't actually use that quote in its entirety. And then the last piece was, it was towards the end of the episode. So we've got this group that is called Centipede, and that's kind of what this device on Mike's arm looks like. It looks like some weird kind of alien centipede. Centipede is reminiscent to me of Hydra, and Hydra is the Shield's main nemesis in the comic books. Now, actually, Hydra is all capitalized, but it doesn't actually stand for anything. It's just, it's the mythological Hydra. Cut off one head and two more grow to take its place. So there was a line at the end where they're referencing Centipede, and they say, well, we didn't cut the head off the centipede, but, you know, we were able to at least, you know, help Mike out or whatever. So that's interesting. I think that we're going to see as the series goes on, I think they're going to try to actually, you know, have Hydra be the bad guys, but they're going to have to, you know, introduce them in. And if Hydra is run by a bald German with a monocle, I will be very, very excited, because Baron Strucker is or is it not Baron Strucker, but the leader of of Hydra is this bald German dude that's got a monocle, and he's very over the top. So I hope they kind of go that way with it.
Yeah, and the first thing he's going after is the French blenders.
Yeah. So anything else that you guys want to add in about the episode? Any highlights? Lou, overall, did you like it?
Yeah, I was really impressed with it. I thought for a first episode, for a pilot episode, one of the better things I've seen.
Good. Josh, what about you? Any other final thoughts?
I was very pleasantly surprised. Not surprised, I guess, but I was happy with what I saw. I was happy that there was more humor in it than I expect to see in a lot of superhero genre stories these days. I have heard some backlash about it, which kind of surprised me, and I'm not really sure why. Maybe they were expecting something darker, but for me, it's exactly what I'm looking for in a comic book story told this way, because it's got some serious stuff in it and some superhero stuff, but it's got some lightheartedness and fun to it also, and that is the kind of story that I really like, and I love Coulson's lines especially, so...
Mm. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this show fares, considering that Arrow, which is going into its second season, it just keeps getting better. And they really, Arrow, was slow to start. S.H.I.E.L.D. seems out of the gate, has a lot going for it, just coming from the films and everything like that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how quickly they, really do get their legs. And if they can, if Joss Whedon here can make it to a second season, oh boy, that's I know people are worried about that. I think this show is good for a while, as long as they can keep up this level of entertainment. I think we are not in danger of losing this anytime soon, so it's very enjoyable. I'm looking so much forward to the rest of the season, and I don't know too much about what's coming. All we know is that there is an 084 that has been discovered, and they have to go take care of it, and they need to confirm it. And Josh, I thought you had a great line to me when I said, I don't know what an 084 is, but you said...
Well, I don't know what an 084 is either. I just know that it is a lot more serious than an 083.
There you go. All right, well, that's all that we have for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. And also you can contact us at our email address, which is shield@randomchatter.com. No need for all the periods in the shield. You can just type out the word shield. Save you some time there.
Please.
So, also, we have a Twitter feed. Make sure you check that out at Agents Podcast. And we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And, of course, if you are listening to this show, you might also enjoy Green Justice, which is an Arrow podcast that Josh and I also host, talking about Arrow. We've been doing that for the last year, and so I hope you check that out. Lou, what else do you have going on that people might want to listen to?
Well, we got the other show on the Random Chatter Network, the flagship show, I guess you'd say, of randomchatter.com, which is our just random thoughts on anything from entertainment to technology to just whatever floats our boat that week. So check that show out, too, if you'd like.
Cool. And, of course, if you enjoyed the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about this. So this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.